everybody. Hello on Zoom. So good to be here. My name is Allie and I'm an alcoholic. And this is a very special place for me to be. So I'm very grateful on many levels. When Dale reached out to me, it was Friday. My 14-year-old daughter was standing next to me when I got the text, and my first reaction was, oh, I don't know. I have this other thing to do, this other thing to do, and I got to find childcare. And my mind started going. And my daughter was standing next to me, and she said, just say you're sick. And I said, that's not how we do things in AA. When we are asked to show up, unless I have a real valid reason, we show up, And so it's just a really beautiful example of how Alcoholics Anonymous is not only helping me learn how to grow up, but helping me pass those values and those principles on to my children too. So it was powerful. So thank you for asking me wherever you are, Dale, and I'm really grateful to be here. This church, this meeting has a really special place in my heart, and I'll get into that. But back up, Allie Alcoholic. My home group is the Strength and Hope meeting in Little Washington on Tuesday mornings at 10. We meet every Tuesday. It's a literature-based meeting. So we read, we have a leader each meeting, and someone brings a topic out of some of the literature, either the 12 by 12 or the big book. And then we share on it. So it's a nice, strong literature-based meeting. I have a service position in that meeting. I'm the secretary. My sponsor is the GSR in that meeting, so it's really been transformative and helped get me right back in the middle of AA by taking those suggestions and getting a service position and showing up early and staying late and doing all the things that we're taught to do in here. My sobriety date is December 24th of 2018. That is the day that I was separated from alcohol by my higher power. And I'll expand on that a little bit later. I think I want to open just real quick. It's just a very brief, out of the 24-hour a day book. So my sponsor and I read, we formally talk 3 days a week. That's our formal check-ins. Not at 8:15, not at 8:25, but at 8:20 every morning on those dates. It's very, rigid, and I need that. I need that kick in the butt. So it's good. But we read out of this book, and when I first got sober, I was still a little belligerent and still a little resistant to some of the old terminology, some of the old language. I couldn't get past some of the patriarchal stuff. I was very, there was a lot of resistance in me still that had to be humbled. And so when she said, we're going to do this my way, or the Alma way, which is her sponsor, we're going to do this the Alma way, and we read out of this book. And I said, okay. So, we started doing this, and it's interesting how that works. The pages must have changed since I read it before, because now that I'm reading this book every day with her, and we, share on it and interpret and filter it and, relate to the words on the page, it's been one of the most powerful books that I've read in here. So today, I just thought today's reading was perfect, just the intro, the thought for the day today. The longer we're in AA, the more natural this way of life seems. Our old drinking lives were a very unnatural way of living. Our present sober lives are the most natural way we could possibly live. During the early years of our drinking, our lives weren't so different from the lives of a lot of other people. But as we gradually became problem drinkers, our lives became more and more unnatural. Do I realize now that the things I did were far from natural? And that just describes my story in a nutshell, just how it starts out as fun, then it's fun with problems, and then it's just problems. And in the beginning, it really was. I wasn't much different. It seemed that I drank like other people. My family, there was not a lot, but I mean, there was some drinking, was always alcohol around. And then just the progression of this disease took me to very unnatural places, to the extent of abandonment of my children and leaving my marriage, and a lot of other really tragic things that this disease took me. So my plan is, I love my favorite speaker always says, well, let's see what God has in store here, because I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. But my plan, or my hope, my intention is to share a little bit about what it was like, and then what happened, and more about what it's like now, because we all know how to get drunk here. But I want to know from you all, and I'm sure you want to hear from me, how I stay sober and how this thing works in my life. So just to qualify briefly, started drinking at 13-ish. Again, it was fun. It was fun. And I do remember the first drink. And I remember the warmth, and I remember the feeling of all that anxiety and that anxious apartness that I felt as a child lifting off my shoulders. I remember immediately going from the straight A nerdy kid to life of the party and hanging out with older boys and dating varsity football players and, just sneaking out of the house at night and drinking a lot, and I remember thinking when I first drank, it tasted awful, but I chugged it down. It was, we lived in Florida at the time, so we thought we were, my friend and I thought we'd be real cool and squeeze our own oranges, right? Because we're in Florida, so we're gonna be fancy about it and juice our own oranges to make screwdrivers with vodka that we stole from our parents' liquor cabinet. And got terribly sick and got caught. Got caught in the bathtub puking, and the whole real classy and glorified. But I remember waking up the next morning feeling awful physically, and then having that thought of, I'm going to do that again as soon as I can. Because it's like, the what do I get, what alcohol does for me? It was a magical elixir. It really was, at that time, until it stopped working. So it's basically, I'm the only alcoholic living in my family. And so I thought I couldn't be an alcoholic, because I didn't come from, my parents are not alcoholics. I have one sibling, she's not one of us. Cousins, everyone's functional, everyone's earth people. I mean, there's no, I had an uncle on each side that both died of this disease, but they were deceased before I really came into my drinking. So I didn't think I could be an alcoholic. But so, again, I had a picturesque childhood. It was just, there was no abuse, there was no trauma. There was, my parents are still married to this day. They just celebrated 43 years of marriage. It was a picturesque childhood. So, and straight A student, on paper, everything looked really, really good. But inside, there was something very, very wrong with me. And I started to know that pretty quickly into my teenage years. So that was really when it was fun, back when it was fun and sneaking out and drinking and experimenting with outside issues. And it was things got bad really quickly. And so by the time I was 17, I managed to graduate high school, barely, but I did manage to graduate high school. And instead of taking the full ride scholarship to the university, I decided it was a better idea to move to Georgia from Florida with my 27-year-old boyfriend, who was a crack dealer, to escape warrants. And so we moved to Georgia. I lived in a trailer park, and it was just, it was a nightmare. My parents didn't know if I was alive or dead for at least 6 months. I was just off the map. I just disappeared and drank and drank and drank and drank. So that time period, 17, 18, 19, was when things started getting really bad, and started realizing that I was not, there was something very wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. I didn't relate it necessarily to the alcohol. I thought it was him that was the problem. I mean, he was abusive and he was a drug dealer, so that would make sense, right? But I never looked at my drinking. So I did, escape that relationship and drove home in the middle of the night. from Georgia to Florida, called my mom from a payphone. We had payphones back then. Called my mom from a payphone, and she immediately came and picked me up and took me back home and nursed me back to health and dried me out, got me back on my feet. And so a new opportunity, right? Like a new life presented itself. So I enrolled in college. Things were really good again for a few years. And then I turned 21 and then discovered the bar scene. And so then started the drinking and driving, then started the waking up, coming to at random people's houses that I didn't recognize. I'm a blackout drinker, started very early with that. So that bar scene sucked me in and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. It was I was able to transform literally through alcohol. And I remember it being a very ritualistic thing. It was like the preparation, like getting ready to go out, the pre-gaming, the drinking beforehand, which bar are we going to, the excitement. I mean, my palms get sweaty just honestly thinking about it. I mean, it's like this physical reaction of, which makes me realize I still have this thing. The bar scene, it was just, I was able to transform from a very reserved, young woman into back again to that life of the party and meeting people and socializing and just really, but then I started getting into a lot of trouble. So I got a DUI. And that DUI, I was 22, so it didn't last long, that 21 to 22 of partying in the bars until I got caught. But that DUI then landed me in BASAP, which then landed me in mandatory AA meetings. And so at 22 years old, I was a rabid atheist, feminist, angry young woman, and did not want to be in the rooms of AA. I remember going to my first meeting. It was the Trinity Church in Manassas, and I got my little slip signed, and I remember sitting in the back of the room and didn't want to be there, didn't want to talk to anybody, got there 5 minutes late, left before the prayer, just really did not want to be there, but I fulfilled. I'm a good student, so I fulfilled, the minimum requirements to pass that class and learned about, all the risks of drinking and everything they teach you in BASAP. And so got that cleared and handled. My parents, being my greatest enablers, got me a good lawyer, were able to get the charges or get my BAC dropped, I think, to a level to where I didn't have to serve time, and got by and got through that. And but that is an important piece because that was my first introduction to AA, and that's when that seed was planted. Even though I did not want to be there and I did not return for another, almost 10 years, voluntarily, I knew where to go. I knew where to go when things started getting out of my control, and I had lost control and lost the choice in whether I drank or not, and was drinking against my will. I had that thought in the back of my head, well, maybe that AA thing is, maybe there's something to that. So it was basically, my 20s were a blur. Lived in a party house, and I did graduate college, which is just surprising. I would show up drunk often, but I graduated college and got a degree and got a career in the veterinary field, and was doing really well managing. I was very functional at that point. Drinking a lot, I mean, partying a lot, but was able to, when you're in your 20s, you can drink until 4 or 5 in the morning and then, rally and get to class on time. And so I was able to do that at that point still. And so I graduated college and had met the man of my dreams at that point. And we were living together, and I had the thought, marriage and a baby will fix me. That will fix me. I'll settle down. I'll be able to settle down. He drank like I did, but he was not, but he was a good person. He is a good person. And he actually has 10 years sober and in AA now. So marriage and a baby will fix me. It did not. I did stay sober through the pregnancy with Leah, my 14-year-old. But she was 3 weeks old when I was back at the bar. And I remember that night and thinking, okay, it's daddy's turn to take care of her. And I need a night out. It's my turn to have a night out. And I'm only going to have one or two because I'm still breastfeeding. So I'll just have one or two. And, didn't get home until the next day. And it was right. I mean, the moment I put alcohol in my system, everything changed. It went right back to where I had left off, worse than where I had left off. So it really declined very quickly from there. It was, again, I still couldn't identify as an alcoholic. I couldn't accept that that was the problem. I didn't want to look at my drinking, because I was, again, at one point pretty functional, but it was getting very, very dysfunctional. The more I was drinking, and then I was introducing outside substances to it as well, and hiding those and sneaking around for my husband. And I have a newborn baby and I'm going out. It was just not a healthy situation, and things were getting worse and worse and worse. This disease being progressive, and it was rapidly progressing. So I thought maybe I was depressed. Because I would have periods of depression and periods of anxiety and periods of mood swings and unpredictable behavior. And in hindsight, that's alcoholism. But at the time, I thought, well, maybe I have a mood disorder, maybe I'm bipolar, maybe I'm this, maybe I'm that. So there was a several year period where I spent more time with a wristband on than not. Being in and out of institutions, hospitals, detoxes, long-term, short-term centers. And I never got anything out of it because I wasn't ready, or I wasn't, listening. And I remember I was sneaking pills. I mean, I wasn't really there for the right reasons. I just wanted to go to get people off my back. I'm going to go and I'll get clean this time. I'll get sober this time. And get my parents off my back, get my husband off my back, demonstrate I'm serious this time. And I'd get out and I'd have maybe a week or two, and then I'd go right back to it. So it was this really, really vicious cycle of, that head full of AA and belly full of beer, saying is so true. It was a very painful existence, to know that this is the problem. I can't stop drinking and using, but I'm about to lose everything. It's like teetering. My ex-husband, my then husband at the time was, one more time, one more time, and this is over. We're gonna try one more time. And so I got served divorce papers in my fourth stint in rehab. And I remember the moment. I remember that moment and just thinking, well, fuck it. Now it's just there's nothing left at this point. So, there's no point to keep trying this anymore. So once the marriage once my marriage ended, when I lost my marriage, I also lost custody of my older daughter. Rightfully so. And my ex-husband did, at the time I hated him, right? I hated him. You're stealing, taking my child from me, and all these justifications and anger, and it's not me, it can't be me, even though I knew deep down it was me, but I couldn't admit it. At the time I hated him, but in hindsight and with a clear, sober mind, he did the best thing, the absolute best thing for Leah, and a very unnatural thing for a father to have to do, to take a 2-year-old still nursing in baby away from her mom. But he did the right thing. He did the right thing. And I got to make amends to him and thank him for that, which was really a powerful moment in my sobriety. So losing the marriage, losing Leah, It was just, I had nothing left to lose in my mind. So I just kept drinking. I just kept drinking. And I had nowhere to live at that point. So I was living in my car for a while, crashing on people's couches. Every once in a while, a group of drunks, and I had like four kind of running buddies, and we would all drink and party together, and we'd scrounge up enough money for a hotel room periodically. But there were several months where I was homeless and just kind of living, crashing wherever we could. And so, that point, still in Manassas, still in Northern Virginia at that time, it was definitely a moment of, and I've heard it's shared that we come into AA surrendered by the bottle. And that was my story. It was like I did not want to or really consciously choose. I didn't want to stop drinking. I couldn't imagine my life without alcohol. But I knew that I was in a desperate place and that I was a broken woman and I had lost everything. I'd lost my job, my house, my marriage, my child, and what else is there, other than my life. And so I was able to, through a moment of surrender, maybe a moment of grace, crawl through the doors of the Church on the Rise in Culpeper, because I humbled myself and come back down to my parents and come to live back here with a couple trash bags full of clothes, and that's all I had. So moved in with my parents. They took me in under the condition, no drinking, you have to go to meetings, all the rules and conditions. And oh yes, of course, of course, of course. And I meant it. I meant it. I really meant it from a very sincere place that I would stay sober this time. This is it. And so I did. So I started going to meetings and I met a really great group of people. The Church on the Rise group in Culpeper was my home group. And I stayed there and I came regularly and I did my best, the best that I could do at that time with what I had. And all I had was a very small amount of willingness. I did not have open-mindedness yet. But I did have enough willingness to get me through the doors, and so I would listen, I wouldn't share, but I would sit and listen. And I'd get a week, maybe 2 weeks, pick up a white chip, go back out, crawl back in. There was this kind of cycle of being around AA, but not really taking any suggestions. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't take the suggestions that were offered to me. I didn't pick up that spiritual toolkit that was laid at my feet. I just wanted to do things my way and just go to the meetings and again, keep people off my back, just check the boxes, and it didn't work. Surprising. So of course I'm thinking now, well, this isn't working. And so yeah, it was about a 5-year period of that, which is a really miserable existence. And I really relate a lot to Dr. Bob's story when he talks about, I reread it this morning actually. He's talking about that like cycle of getting enough money to get some liquor but then having to use like high powered sedatives that was prescribed. Well, he was probably self-prescribing them as he was a doctor, but like I would go to see doctors and get medicine to help keep me like level until I could drink, and then I would drink on top of the medicine, and then things started getting really crazy where I was having mental breakdowns, I was hallucinating. I was institutionalized a lot because of those, you're not supposed to drink when you're on those medications. So self-harm is a part of my story. It was just that place of, and I remember reading that for the first time in the big book when I first read the words incomprehensible demoralization. That was what hit me the most. And that's where I started to identify with the words in these pages where I could relate to that. I knew what that meant. Like, I know what incomprehensible demoralization feels like. And so, so I did. So I got to a place finally, where I was broken enough and willing enough for God to enter, for that moment of grace and moment of humility. And I love that line in We Agnostics. It was just like I was still rebelling against the spirituality of the program, still thinking, still having this prejudice, this prejudgment that it was religion and that it was, this and that. And I was still very rebellious against the idea of the spiritual part of the program. I've heard there's two sides to the program, the spiritual part and the outside, right? So like I was very resistant to the whole program, really, because it was like the spirituality piece that I couldn't grasp. I couldn't accept it. But that part in We Agnostics, it was just that simple. The God, my ideas didn't work. The God idea did. I don't need to debate that anymore. I couldn't. I had nothing left in me to debate that anymore. It was just like, I am out of good ideas. I have destroyed my life over and over and over, going lower and lower each time. What else is there? Either God is everything or God is nothing. So I had nowhere else to turn, and so I read We Agnostics as I was instructed to do and decided to give it a try. Decided to give it a try. So I got a sponsor, Shirley W. And she sat with me in the hospital several times going through when I was going through DTs and getting Valium infusions and IV fluids. And my blood pressure was like 220 over something and coming off mostly alcohol. But I remember them doing a urine test and saying, I'm surprised you're walking right now with the amount of substances that are in your system. But Shirley sat with me in the hospital. They, got me back on my feet and strong enough and dry enough to get to a meeting. And so Shirley and Mike would drive me around to meetings and I would just got in her pocket. I just got in both their pockets really and just went to as many meetings as I could and started taking suggestions. And that shift that the day that Christmas Eve, December 2018, I did not plan that day. I didn't. I've heard people share like they remember their last drink. It was like a glass of whiskey and it was on the rocks. And I put it down and I said, this is my last drink. And like I did not have that experience. I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure it was box wine, room temperature, because that was where I was hiding my stash at that point. And it had gotten to the point where I couldn't hold down. My stomach was so GI tract was so messed up from the chronic alcoholism that I was having to drink box wine room temperature through a straw to get it down. And then I would usually throw it up again and then drink more. And if I can get enough down to stop the jitters and to settle my stomach, and then I could go through the day. And so, it was probably box wine, but I don't remember the day. I don't remember any white light or burning bush moment. I just knew I didn't drink that day. And I didn't drink the next day. And I went to a meeting. I went to another meeting, and it took off. My life started changing. I started feeling something greater than myself working in my life, and something that was not my control. Like I was not in the driver's seat anymore, and it wasn't a conscious choice to get out of the driver's seat. It was just I was put in the back seat, and the people in the AA were really a big part of that, of course. I happened to land in a group that had a lot of good sobriety in that room and long term, like 30, 40 years of sobriety. And I was able to just to land there and hear what I needed to hear and get the support that I needed to get. And so I was 4 months sober when something pivotal happened. My youngest daughter, Scarlett, I have two children. My youngest daughter, Scarlett, who's now seven, while I was still drinking at the end of my drinking, it was, I was going to meetings and still drinking that whole circus. I was also in the middle of a vicious custody battle with her alcoholic father. They wanted full custody. They wanted me out of her life. I wanted full custody. We had two like pit bull attorneys, fighting in court. So much debt, so much vengeance. It became to a point where it wasn't even about Scarlett anymore. It was just about each one of us wanting to bring the other one down. It was a very two active alcoholics. I mean, it was just a nightmare. And so that I got sober in the middle of that. It was actually at the tail end of that almost 2 year nightmare. But AA was there. So I had an AA presence at every single court hearing. Shirley was there for most of them. They didn't testify. They weren't asked to testify. It wasn't that. It was just they sat in the, the lobby of the courtroom. Pete A was there one of the times. I didn't ask him to come. I just shared in the meeting that I had a court hearing coming up, and it was a custody thing, and it was a pivotal one, and he was there. He was just sitting in the lobby, and when I would take breaks from, we'd have a court remission or whatever it's called, where you take a break, and Pete would stand outside with me and hold my hands and pray. And so I had an AA presence with me through every single court hearing. So I got sober 4 months before the end of that custody battle, before the final hearing. And it was interesting how God works, because through the whole fight, through me trying to make it my way, I'm right, he's wrong, he's an unfit parent, mind you, I'm still drinking and driving with the infant in the car, and but it's all his fault. And but it was so in the middle of all of that is when I got sober. And that happened in December 24th. And so the final court hearing, I'm 4 months sober. I didn't bring all my documents, all my proof of him being a terrible person that I usually bring to the court hearings. I didn't bring any of that. I just brought a few pictures of my daughter and I and my 4 month chip. And that's all I brought. And it was a moment of surrender. It was a moment of just acceptance. And like I knew at that point that I was not in control. And I was fully expecting, for there to be this terrible outcome and, nightmare with his but her biological father. He didn't show up. After fighting me for 2 years in court, he didn't show up. And so I find out after, again, like about a month later, of him not showing up for visits, not just disappearing off the grid, that he had actually fled the country and moved to New Zealand and abandoned ship. Just he realized basically that he hadn't won. He wasn't going to get full custody and wasn't going to ruin me like had planned, because I had gotten sober and was turning my life around with your help. So that's just one of the greatest, it is, I think, the greatest miracle of this program and God working in my life, because my way was ending in was this turmoil, this tornado of absolute chaos. I was plotting his death. That was the way I was going to handle it. I was just like, well, if the court's not going to handle it, then we're just going to take care of it ourselves. It was just insanity. And the second, I get sober and surrender to this program and show up to that court hearing, and God handled it. So I have a magical piece of paper from the court that says I have full custody and that he can't have contact with her. And it's been 5 years now, and he's been gone. So we're free today. We're free. And I attribute that 100% to me getting sober and to Alcoholics Anonymous and God working in my life. So yeah, it's just a really, when I reflect on that, it still seems like it didn't even still doesn't even feel real. So yeah, so fast forward, so I'm sober, going to meetings. I have, Shirley's my sponsor, picking up chips, picked up my 4 year chip. Shirley gave it to me, and was doing really well, working the steps and going to meetings and a service position. I'm checking, doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, but feeling myself starting to drift. And I've heard so many people share this. I stopped going to meetings. I've heard people say this a million times. I stopped going to meetings and distanced myself from you all and started getting crazy again, you know, and it's a matter of time. I heard Kevin shares all the time that this thing has a 72-hour shelf life for him anyway, and that's very true for me as well. It's like I have to be at a meeting, you know, 70 about 72-hour shelf life is about how long this has for me. It's that frequent, consistent contact with you all that I have to have. And so I was going to one meeting a week. And I remember seeing Billy actually at the Alcathon and telling you that I had, I'm going to about one meeting a week. I do Sperryville and every saying you, but you and I both know that we're too sick for one meeting a week. Like that's, and I was like, you're damn right. Like, damn right. But that, you know, that was actually, I kept going to that one meeting a week and just kind of, again, started showing up 5 minutes late, leaving 5 minutes early. It was like these patterns coming back. I wasn't drinking, I wasn't craving a drink, but I was distancing, I was pulling back. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if there's like it's just my wiring, you know, that I resist what's healthy for me, that I resist what's working. Around that same time, so about 2 years ago, Shirley was having a lot of health problems, starting to lose her memory, like early dementia, and a lot of physical health problems and surgeries. And so my sponsor came to me after, you know, sponsoring me for 4 years, and said that she needed to step back, you know, that she was not in a place to be of service to me, in that role. Now, the right thing to do, the sober thing to do, and what she expected me to do was to find another sponsor. I did not do that. So, instead, I met a man, got engaged, stopped going to meetings, and decided I would try a different spiritual path. I'll hike more. I'll be out in nature more. I'll do more yoga. I'll meditate at home. And I found people to co-sign my bullshit too, which is even scarier. I wouldn't talk to people in AA about it, right? But I would talk to like my sister, who was well-intentioned, but not doesn't understand this, nor should she. Let's go to women's circles together, you know, let's do we'll, you know, do other things. And there's all kinds of different spiritual paths. Maybe AA is not your path. And it sounded, it was all this justification, rationalization, and it was the ism being activated. Now I know that. And so I did. So I stopped going to meetings. I did not have a sponsor because Shirley had stepped back. And I did not drink. But for out of respect for singleness of purpose of this meeting, but I do think it's important to share because it's one. It's a, the, I think the biggest lesson of the last year or so for me, 18 months, has been cunning, baffling, and powerful, and alcohol in any form, wet or dry. So I, you know, just to keep it real vague, I was back in an addictive cycle. I was back into a full-blown addiction with an over-the-counter supplement, and I'm going to leave it at that. But I was back right to where I started. I didn't lose anything. You know, I wasn't destroying my life. It was very, very insidious. It was much more insidious than alcohol because alcohol was obvious. I mean, I would burn my life to the ground every single time very quickly. But with this, it was very insidious because it was just a supplement. And I was, you know, doing okay. I was still doing, I was working and I was, you know, being of service to my family and in this new wonderful relationship and, you know, which did not end well, surprisingly. And so I got to a place, and this was, I guess, you know, November or so, a little more than a year ago. So what, 2023? Yeah, 2023, where I realized that this is not good. Like I'd finally come, the delusion was starting to wear thin. I couldn't maintain that anymore. I couldn't with good conscience. You know, continue to pick up chips and continue to say that I'm completely clean and sober when I was in this addictive cycle and not living the AA way of life and not practicing these principles. And, you know, I wasn't an active member of AA anymore at that point. And so I got a new sponsor. So I went to the meeting in Little Washington and asked my current sponsor to sponsor me. And she, you know, I remember the moment we had this, we sat at a coffee shop and I showed her the supplement that I was taking. And, you know, she basically looked at me and said, if we're going to do this, I cannot and will not sponsor you if you're taking this. And it was a moment of reckoning. It was like, you know, she's like, this is what you're going to do. If you want me to work with you, if you want me to sponsor you, if you want to get back on track, you're going to stop the supplement, number one. You're going to go into our home group meeting and share about it with the group. And then we're going to get back into the book. We're going to start working the steps. You're going to call me 3 days a week. We went through the regimen. And I remember just being in a place of, it was like that crossroads moment of, the delusion had been smashed. I realized that this is not okay, what I've been doing. But damn, I did not want to be rigorously honest. I did not want to humble myself. I did not want to lose my time. I did not, you know, it was this really like nauseating feeling of having to go into my home group and share about that, you know, have a burning desire and talk about it and get honest. But I had no choice. I knew that if I did not do what she had suggested, that I was going to drink. I knew that it was going to take me back to drinking. So I did. So I humbled myself. I went into my home group. I shared about it in a vague manner. Got off the supplement, started working with her intensely at a very different level. Deep into the book, you know, did another fourth step and a fifth step with her. And took, you know, so the third step prayer, the last year, so technically January 31st of 2024 is the day that I fully surrendered, stopped the supplement, made the confession to my home group. So I'm really like that. December 24th, 2018 is the day I was separated from alcohol, and I hold that date very sacred. But January 31st, 2024 is the day that I recommitted and really gave myself to this program, and signed a contract with the God of my understanding. And when I took that third step prayer this time, I offered myself to God and asked him to build with me and do with me as he will. And God has been doing that. And it has been excruciating. It has been a very, very difficult year. There's been a lot of joy. You know, it's not been all hardship. There's been a lot of joy. There's been a lot of feeling of relief. There's been a, you know, again, getting honest and being transparent and not having that monkey on my back and being able to, you know, be back in the middle of AA. And, you know, there's been a lot of joy, but there's been a lot of hard times. You know, I remember calling my sponsor a few times throughout this past year, you know, just, and I said to her, I've never felt this kind of emotional ang like angst. I mean, angst is like, it was just the worst feeling. And she was like, yeah, these are real feelings. Like these are real, this is, you're supposed to be feeling this, you know, to walk me through it and, you know, you're going to be okay. And let's pray about it. Let's read in the book. Let's do this. Let's do that. I mean, just all solution based. But you know, we lost Shirley, right? And so, and then I also had another death, of my mentor and, dear friend died very suddenly in June of last year. It was in a work setting. He was my mentor in veterinary medicine and helped me a lot when I was bad with my alcoholism, even let me live with him and got a call that he had died in his sleep. He was 51 years old, a heart attack, something, you know, I don't know. He wasn't one of us. I mean, he was squeaky clean, amazing man. You know, and then we lost Shirley. And, you know, so it's just been like feeling so much grief and some anger. There's been all these new emotions, new facets of emotions that have been coming up, but the difference today is that I know without a shadow of a doubt that not only do I know with that alcohol won't work for me and it's not an option anymore, and Shirley used to always say that for me, it's not on the table anymore. Alcohol is just not on the it's not an option, and I knew that, and I still know that today, thank God. But I also now know no human power and no other substance or supplement or thing that I can get my hands on, nothing outside of me is going to help fix me or change these emotions. The only solution is, like Mike always says, the answer is always the same. Whatever the problem is, whatever it is, whether it's fancied or real, pray about it, go to a meeting and share about it, work with another alcoholic. It's the same every single time, and that has worked for me. And so, getting through some hard times, but asking God and like really from a sincere innermost self place, when I took that third step prayer this time with my sponsor, God's been building with me and crafting me and molding me and forging me in the fire, it feels like, and but even through those moments of turmoil, emotional pain, it feels right is the only way to describe it. It doesn't feel good necessarily in the moment, but it feels like this is I'm being molded. Like there's something happening here. There's something happening here that was not happening. I mean, I wasn't drinking and I was sober and I was in AA, but this is different. And I don't know if it's, a different sponsorship family, working from a different angle of approach within the book, going deeper into the steps. Like really, I hadn't really worked six and seven before. I mean, I skimmed six and seven and moved on to my amends, So Kara's like, you're not, we're doing six and seven. Like, you're actually going to, and we're not even going to look at your list, your eighth step list until, until God reveals that you're ready and it will happen. And so I'm living, working the steps six and seven right now, and it just again, it feels different. It feels deeper. It feels like real AA. And so I'm at three meetings a week. That's not where I need to be. I'd like to be a little bit more than that, but I have a home group again, like I said, my Tuesday morning meeting that I make coffee and I'm the secretary, and I'm there every week, no matter what. Even during the snowstorm, I was there. And Sunday night, I usually go to the Sperryville music group, and then Friday morning we have a nice little step study at that same church in Sperryville. And so, being a single mom of two girls, it's a little challenging to get to more meetings, but I'm working on improving that as well. But three meetings a week, service position, and I talk to my sponsor, like I said, officially 3 days a week, but we talk every day, every single day. And so, just the change that I'm sensing, that I'm feeling, that's occurring within me is substantial. And none of that would have happened without, bottoming out again in a different way. It was a different kind of bottom. It wasn't alcohol this time, but it was, I cannot, the biggest takeaway, I think, like I said, is just how cunning this disease is, how alcohol will show up in other forms than bottles, and come at me in different and very deceptive ways, and how quickly I revert to my old behaviors. I mean, it was a matter of a month or less of not going to meetings and not talking to you all and not being around you all that I was crazy again, that I was right back to being crazy and looking for something to fix me and, finding a man and a supplement and what can I get my hands on that's like, I couldn't drink, but I needed something to fix me. And so it was literally a matter of a couple of weeks that I was right back to the old behaviors. And so So really, so the I guess the most important message, and if my story can be of any service, it just really is about the vigilance that I have to have in here, that going to meetings is essential. It's a huge part of my sobriety. But I have to, like Mike always says, there are things I must do. There are things I must do. And those musts for me are, I have to tell on myself right away. I mean, the second that my, not second, maybe a couple minutes, but like when my brain starts going to like, well, this sounds like a good decision, you know, it's usually not. It's usually the absolute wrong decision, even if it's a small one, you know, it's a, that progression of things that happens. And so telling on myself quickly, you know, having a really close and daily contact with my sponsor so that she doesn't just get a call from me when I'm in crisis, so that she knows me on the inside and outside and can sense things going awry before I can. That has been a really powerful thing that's occurred and is starting to occur in our relationship. Learning to navigate hardship and tragedy and watching people go through unimaginable tragedies this past year and not drink. You know, when I when we went to visit Mike in the hospital 2 days after the accident, you know, one of the first things that he said is, I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. He's like, it's not even crossed my mind. And he said, you know, when I get out of here, I'm going to find that person who hit us. And I reeled for a second because I was like, oh, is this going to be, I'm going to kill him, I'm going to hurt him, I'm going to anger, you know, who knows? We're in shock and everyone's in shock. He said, I'm going to find that person and I'm going to forgive him. You know, and that's the program in action. And so watching, you know, being able, having the honor of standing witness to people go through things that I can't imagine going through and not drinking, and not only not drinking, but he's still helping other people. I mean, he's making phone calls to people and, you know, getting to meetings and asking me how I'm doing. And I'm like, it doesn't matter how I'm doing, you know, but being of service, you know. And so it's been, that's been a very, very, you know, Kara and I talked about it, my sponsor and I, on the way down to the hospital. It's like the feeling, the presence of AA was is just so strong when it comes to, and I had never experienced that before. I had never experienced, you know, death or tragedy within the program at that close to that level of closeness. And so, feeling the presence of AA and the presence of God so strongly, was really important for me. So, you know, I think I have a beautiful life today. You know, it's been quite a ride. Like I said, my first meeting was when I was, you know, 22 years old, and I'm going to be 43 in a few months. And so, so it's not been an easy, an easy thing, but my life is beautiful. Like I said, I'm free. I'm completely free. I have full custody now of my daughter Scarlett, my little one, and my older daughter. I have 50-50 custody with her dad. Her dad has 10 years sober in AA. We speak the same language. We speak recovery, so we co-parent beautifully. I did forget to mention again in this turmoil of the last year that he remarried and had a new baby. That was a tough one too. That was a tough one too, because, you know, losing that marriage and losing the man of my dreams. And it was like we had this good co-parenting relationship and we're really good friends, and then enter new wife into the picture and stepmom to my daughter. And so navigating all of that, I could not have done that. I wanted to throw a bomb on it, you know. I just was so many emotions, anger, resentment, fear, all driven by fear, you know, fear of losing my daughter, fear of insecurities, but I was able to navigate all of those emotions, with the help of my sponsor and these rooms and God. It's like I didn't throw a bomb on it. And not only did I not throw a bomb on it, but I didn't act out. I acted, I might not have been like the nicest to her, to the new wife, but I also wasn't rude, and I didn't, so I've been, and that again, that's AA working in my life. That is not me. Like I don't handle those situations on my own well. So I was able to navigate that situation, navigate a lot of things this past year without relying on, not only without relying on alcohol, but without relying on any mind altering or emotion altering substance, whether it be prescribed or over the counter, legal or illegal. And so it's been a really beautiful journey. Yeah, I think I'll just close. With saying thank you to this group mainly, and share one memory, and then I'll pass. But this group is very special to me. I remember before I got sober, during that merry-go-round of being institutionalized and not being able to stay sober, I didn't want to share in meetings, and so I really liked this meeting because I could just sit and listen, and but I still couldn't, I wasn't able to identify. I was identifying out. I was still, terminally unique, and there's someone in this room tonight that was helping me a lot and was sponsoring me, or trying to. I was not very receptive at the time, trying to sponsor me and doing a damn good job at it, but I wish I was a little more receptive. And I would meet her here before the meeting and read the big book. And I remember sitting out on the stoop out there. It was summertime, so it was warm. And I had been drinking, because again, I was physically addicted and I could not stop drinking. And so, but I was still coming. I'm like, I know I have to be there. I have to go. But I could not drink at that time. And so, I remember sitting down, and I'm sure she could smell it on me. And she would just ask, have you been drinking today? And I would say yes. And there was never judgment. There was never rejection. My family had rejected me. If they smelled alcohol on me, I wasn't allowed there. It was just, okay, let's go in and read the big book, and then let's listen to the speaker. And I was always welcomed here and loved here and never judged. And that is, I think, such a beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the only place I've ever found it, because even my own blood family, wouldn't let me around them if I was drinking, and understandably so. So being here and being able to say with complete rigorous honesty that I am clean and sober today by the grace of God and this fellowship, and good sponsorship, and a lineage of people before me that show me how to do this thing, is an absolute honor. So thank you.